Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy. On Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Welcome to Inspired Conversations. I'm your host, Linda Joy, publisher of Aspire Magazine, inspiring women to live their best life since 2006. I can't believe we're celebrating 14 years. I've been on a mission to inspire women to live their best lives. And one of the ways I do that is through the inspiring conversations of this radio show. My guests are creating magic in the world. And I love bringing these conversations to you so you can learn that you're not alone on this journey. Today, we're going to be talking about love, one of my favorite topics. And I think we can all relate that falling in love is never a straight line to happily ever after, is it? Relationships go through seasons of change, renewal, darkness, and light. So promises longtime therapist and couples coach Linda Carroll in this conversation about her new book, Love Skills, The Key to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love, which offers specific, effective solutions to the most common struggles that couples face. Linda is the author of the recently released Love Skills that I just shared about, and Love Cycles, The Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love. Now, while she's worked as a therapist and couples coach for over three decades and has acquired numerous certificates and degrees along the way, she says that her own 35-year marriage is the primary source of her knowledge when it comes to the cycles of love. I'm so excited to have you here, Linda. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. We certainly need love skills at this time, don't we? More than ever.
Oh, more than ever, as you can say. And I love that both the names of your book, because I love that action word, unlocking lasting wholehearted love, because it reminds me that it's there within us. We just need to unlock it so we can access the skills.
I love that you said that. That's right. It is there in us. It's not in somebody else, including the person that we are loving. It's in us, and the ability to change the dynamics is also in us. But that's very different than how most of us grew up thinking, certainly.
Oh, I was a true romantic in my younger years, and now I've been blessed with a 25-year relationship with my best friend. And as you said, there's seasons of change, renewal, darkness, and light for all relationships. But when you have the skill sets and the tools, which is what you're so passionate about sharing, you show us that a healthy relationship is possible. So tell us what you mean when you say love skills and that love is an inside job.
I mean that that's a huge question, but I'm going to try to make it very quick. That when we fall in love, what we have is a lot of feeling. I did it at 11. How many life skills do we have at 11? Not too many. And it's a big feeling that's mediated by hormones and chemical changes and brain changes. And we do it, just think of the expression fall in love. You just are walking along and you fall over into this feeling that sweeps you away. But it doesn't take anything else other than just being alive to feel the feeling, to fall in love. Love is a feeling. A healthy relationship, one that can really withstand the many seasons of life, is based on skills. And some of us come having some of those skills already, or we were lucky enough to learn them growing up. Some of us come with very poor skills, but here's the great news. Anybody can learn them. If you're willing, you can learn the skills. Just like you can learn to work a computer. Remember when computers first came out? I do. And how it was just, I looked at this thing. It was in an office I was working with. It was a huge machine. People were pressing different numbers and all sorts of strange things were happening on the screen. I thought I could never do that. Now I've written 2 books. I Zoom people all the time. I'm not great, but I can do it. We can all learn love skills in the same way we learned computer skills.
That's such a powerful lesson too, because, you know, I can remember back as you're speaking to my younger years, and I had the false belief, and I'm curious to see if many other of your clients have this belief. I believed, especially in my 20s and 30s, based on my own experiences growing up, that if it was really love, then it would be easy. I would never have any strife or miscommunication, etc. And what a false piece of bullshit that is, right? Yeah. And I jeopardized many relationships because I had that false belief that if I had to work at it, then it wasn't real love. Have you experienced that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Have you found that to be an experience of many of your clients?
Yes, I think it was certainly my experience. It's what got me to write the book, is believing for years of disastrous relationships that the feeling was an indicator. First of all, before you even get to the skills, the feeling does not necessarily mean you should be with that person you have the feelings for. For some of us, when we feel those feelings, we should run the other way. And it is totally different than what we learn in our culture. I mean, just think about songs. You know, I saw him standing there and I knew he was, quote, the one, or she was the one. And from then on, my life, mattered. And in fact, for some people, selection process is the problem. We've got to have a partner who is able to use the skills, to learn the skills, to use the skills. So it starts even before you're in the relationship. It starts with the wisdom to select somebody, not just with what the feelings are inside of you, which is totally contraindicated in a lot of our cultural beliefs, but with somebody who has the ability to navigate a long-term relationship with all of the kinds of skills that it takes to do that. The first one being willing to learn.
Ooh, that's a big one, right? Being open. Yeah,
it is. It is.
So for you, what is the difference between love and loving?
The difference between love and loving is that love is a feeling, and it comes and it goes. I've been with my husband for 35 years. I don't feel love for him every moment. Sometimes I feel rage or boredom or, friendship, but so what? And sometimes I feel deep, wonderful love and connection, but it's not a steady thing. Sometimes I feel annoyed. I just went out in the hall and said, when are you going to put this stuff away? You know, we sort of got into it. Wait, you know, we're stuck in this house. What about your stuff? Blah, blah, blah. It wasn't a loving moment. So the feelings of love come and they go. But loving is the behavior. Loving is the action that we do. He just brought me a latte. Knowing I had this interview, it's my favorite thing. He does that every morning. However he feels towards me or whatever is going on in his life, every morning he comes in with a latte. Now, that's not because he's in love with me every morning. It's because he practices those behaviors that put a lot of money in the love bank account, the goodwill behaviors. That's what loving is. It's the practice of behaviors.
It's the action, right? It's not going by the feeling. It's just being committed to the loving action.
That's right.
Of helping someone, of letting someone feel loved. But you might not even be feeling it in the moment, like you said about the latte, or in the moment where he was testing your patience with the stuff a few moments ago. It wasn't that you don't love him. You were just having another emotion at that time.
That's right. And it wasn't about love. I mean, we can't feel love all the time, but I thought that we could. And I wanted to, because doesn't it feel juicy? And it feels so delicious to be in love and to feel that feeling and to walk around all the time like you're in enchantment. But it's not what life is. And that's one of the first things people often say to me. There's usually 2 presenting opening statements from people who want coaching or therapy. One is, I'm not in love with my partner anymore. And because that feeling has waved or it is tampered off, or they're in a hard season, there is this sense that the relationship is over if I don't feel this every moment. And the other thing that people say is we don't communicate. And I have often, I'll have two people in my office or now online, two people on Zoom, and they're saying we don't communicate. And I say, tell me about it. And these wonderful communicators are communicating articulately about themselves, about what happens. Here's what they really mean. They mean we don't communicate under stress, because under stress, we respond differently than we do when we're not under stress. Living with another person, in just a regular life, that creates tremendous stress. And what we're going through right now, living together, quarantined in a little room together or a little house together, or even a big house together, exaggerates that stress. I remember that when I remember in the beginning of this love affair that I had with my husband many decades ago, I remember saying to him, oh, I'd love to be just on a desert island with you with no way to get off, just the two of us on that. And here we are, we're on it. Oh my gosh, Linda, we're on the island together. All of us are on that desert island with our partner. And it's not what I thought it would be for 35 years ago, where we just walked around gazing at each other, saying, isn't it wonderful we're together 24/7? Because we respond differently to what's going on in the world. We manage stress differently. And that's one of the biggest issues I'm hearing with couples, is what one person does to soothe themselves, makes the other person anxious. So the loving behavior really starts with generosity and making room for two people. And we have to work at it. I think every day we have to start it again, or many of us do, and do that work.
I believe that too. Every day is a new day, right? I try not to take the past with me into the new day, especially if there was strife or anything. It's like, let go at the end of every day. And so that I'm in a new energy of love the next day.
Yes, that's
we're gonna take a break, Linda. And when I come back, I want to talk about the five stages of lasting love that you share in your books, and that is the elements of your practice, because they're really, really speak to me, and I know they'll speak to our listeners. And I'll be back in a moment. I'm with Linda Carroll of lindacarroll.com. You can learn more about the empowering work she is doing as a therapist and couples coach, as well as about her books, Love Skills and Love Cycles. We'll be back in a moment.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Are you ready to experience the unshakable love and unleashed passion you really want? Great news! Discover what thousands of people are doing to transform their relationships in ways they never thought possible. And your partner does not need to participate in the process to enjoy the results you want in your relationship. Relationship expert and Aspire magazine columnist Stacey Martino and her husband Paul are the founders of RelationshipDevelopment.org and Relationship You. They have successfully empowered thousands of clients with tools and strategies that really work to transform their relationship, any relationship. And your partner does not even need to participate for their proven system to work for you. Transforming your relationship is possible, and it begins with you. Take the first step and visit relationshipdevelopment.org today.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food than we know what to do with in this country, yet 17 million kids in America are struggling with hunger. Makes no sense. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Hey, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at Om Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. Om Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
You're listening to Inspired Conversations. I'm with Linda Carroll, the author of Love Skills and Love Cycles. So Linda, in our, right before we went to break, I asked about the five stages of lasting love. Would you like to share them with the listeners?
Sure, I'm happy to. The first, and the stages are not something I created. They're really built on all kinds of the stages of seasons. You know, that's but also from our understanding of how we develop as individual people, beginning with falling in love with our primary caretaker. What happens when we go from feeling merged with our, usually it's our mom, feeling merged with our mother, to differentiating, becoming a whole person, where we know we're not her and we care about her, but we are not one. And that falling in love is very much like that process of growing up. So it comes from many, many people's work. My work stands on the shoulders of a lot of great people I've been blessed enough to study with and learn about. Stage one is the merge. And the merge is what happens when we, and if I want to go back to this analogy, if you look at a baby, if you've been around babies or had a baby, the way that baby gazes at its mother and its mother gazes at the baby, and there is this just incredible sense of being one. And that's what we do when we fall in love. We gaze. My husband and I used to call it looks. We look at the other person and we feel like we found our other half. There were lots of words flying around in the 90s, soulmate and twin flame. And and I'm glad that's over. Although truly when people believe that, that's job security for therapists, because that does not last forever. But that first feeling of falling in love is the same feeling that we had as infants. Like you look at this other person and it seems like everything about them supports the idea that you're meant to be together. You find all kinds of commonalities, and even the red flags take on a kind of glow where, you know, this person has had 9 unsuccessful relationships, but I understand him and I know how to make it work because he's so sensitive. So in that first stage, and it's mediated by chemicals and brain changes, there is this sense of two halves making a whole. And that has diminishing returns. The first time we fall in love, it lasts about 3 years. And then each time we fall in love, it lasts less and less amounts of time. Sometimes I get people coming in their 40s and 50s and saying, gosh, it doesn't last very long now. You know, I'm only in love for 3 months. Well, it's because they've done it more and more and more. And like all chemicals, you have to do it more often to get the high. When the chemicals start to wear off, what happens is we move into the power struggle. Those things that we fell in love with, those very qualities begin to annoy us. And we call that, you know, with an infant, we call that the terrible twos. But what's really happening is the two-year-old is saying, you're not me. You're not the boss of me. I'm my own person. I don't want to wear that. I have this wonderful photo of my youngest son going off to school. I guess he was about 3, with 2 socks that didn't match. And everything was wrong about how he dressed, but he dressed himself. And he was so proud of it, because what I had put out for him, he said, no way, I'm going to do it my own way. He's still dressing himself his own way, and he's 42. But it's not terrible twos. It's just the beginning of that child saying, you're not me. And that's what happens when we go into the second stage, which I call doubt and denial. We doubt the relationship is perfect. And then we deny it. We say no, because we don't want to lose that sense of perfect love. But at this point, the power struggles begin. The very qualities we fell in love with start to annoy us. And we begin to see the ways that we're different, that really not just annoy us, but there's something I describe as infinity loops. And the way that works is that the thing that is your most, your greatest vulnerability. What happens is your partner will press that button and you will move into fight or flee or freeze. And the behavior you do under that stress will push their button. So this is how it works. For example, we know that, and not everybody will fit into this, but we know that, and I'm certainly do fit into this, that from the research, that for most women, disconnection is the most, that's their greatest vulnerability. And for most men, it's feeling criticized. So let's say my husband and I go out, we have a wonderful dinner, we talk, we're connected, we come home, and he picks up a book. And what I feel is disconnected. So I say to him, what's wrong? He says, nothing's wrong. I say, well, we were having this really great connection and now you're gone. He says, what do you mean I'm gone? I'm reading a book. He's starting to feel defensive, right? I'm starting to feel, where did this wonderful, sweet connection go? And then what happens is we move into a loop. I say, what's wrong? Because I go into fight. That's what I do when I'm under stress. I don't hit. I get sarcastic. I criticize. I go into fight and he goes into flight. So I say, what's wrong? He says nothing. He backs away. I say something's wrong. He gets upset. He starts to feel criticized. He withdraws. And the more he withdraws, the more I feel what? Abandoned. And the more I feel abandoned, the more I criticize. So that's the loop. And that goes on, that power struggle goes on in stage two. And pretty soon we're acting out of stress more and more with each other. And we move into the third stage, which I call disenchantment or disillusionment. And in disillusionment, some of those loops are really set into place. And it seems like in that place that all those perfect ways, the perfect signs that we were with the right person become the opposite. And everything points to we've made the biggest mistake of our life. Is this making sense so far?
It's right on point. And I just love how you describe what it feels like, because some people don't know how to name what they're experiencing, but you're doing such a beautiful job of letting them know what it looks like in each of these stages.
Yeah. Okay. That's great, because we all know what that's like. And so in that first stage, it's like we're made for each other. In the second stage, we start to find out we're not so made for each other. And it's a worry because we like that feeling of this is my other half. In the third stage, it seems like we're not made in any way to be together. All we see is incompatibility. And then what happens, it moves to stage four. We begin to realize, and here's the good news. In that third stage, we begin to realize that the other person is not our other half. And there's a loneliness in that, because there's something wonderful about believing that we found our other half. But in fact, there is no other half. And that's one of the biggest lessons, is that what my wholeness has to be in me. If I'm not self-partnered with me, I don't have a chance of being a good partner for somebody else. And so stage four is when people often come to me. Although that's really, the good news is people come earlier and earlier nowadays. They used to always wait till things were completely falling apart. But now with more of the coaching and more of awareness that skills are so important, I get couples before it's falling apart, which is great. And stage four is the decision, which is I can't be in the pain anymore. Sometimes partners feel like they want to be out of the relationship, but what they really want to be out is out of the loop. And if they can learn to be out of the loop, they don't leave the relationship. In fact, they can get all that really good stuff back at the beginning, but with a lot more wisdom, knowing that we're not going to stay in stage one. We go through this multiple times, but when you do the work, which starts with knowing yourself, understanding the first part of skills is knowing me, know thyself, and where I'm triggered, and understanding that when my partner picks up a book after we've had an intimate dinner, it's not that he's abandoning me. It's that he doesn't have the appetite for ongoing discussion and connection like I do. And really getting that, You know, one of the things he said to me once is that you want to talk about something, and then you want to talk about talking about it, and then you want to talk about talking about talking about it, which is what I do with my girlfriends, which is true. And he says, I just want to talk about it once. Understanding that the differences are not bad, that for him, that's enough. He's had enough of connection, and he needs to be off doing his own thing. And for me, I'd love to connect all the time. So being aware of that, being aware that differences are not bad or wrong, and knowing I have to manage my own need for ongoing connection, that's not his problem. That's mine. The other part that comes into that, before we even learn the communication skills, is recognizing that my wholeness is in me. I am already whole. I don't need another half of a person. I am not a half of a person to begin with. So my work is finding my wholeness. And then the third kind of skill is understanding that there is really an art to communication. It's not just something that happens because we have a feeling. In fact, one of the things I talk about is that the more intense sometimes our need to talk about something, the more that is a sign not to talk about it until we sort out some of that intensity, because we're going to absolutely blow our partner away. You know, if you start out with, I have to talk to you about something, who's going to say, oh, I'm so glad, please share. That's not what happens. What happens is when we raise our voice or we come intensely, even sometimes with intensity that is positive, we may push the other person away instantly so that they're not open to what we're saying. So we move into the third part of the skills, which is really learning the skills of communication and practicing those skills, which a lot of which are self-soothing and self-management skills, moves us into the fifth stage, which is wholeheartedness. And even if we don't stay in the relationship, we can be wholehearted. In fact, people can leave a relationship wholeheartedly. It's not that it's easy, it's really hard, but it really, in some ways, is the most soulful work I know. Staying in wholehearted love after you understand what it is isn't possible. It's like staying in that first stage. But I like to think of the stages, and this sometimes helps people understand them, is that they're a place we live from and we know how to get back to. And wholeheartedness is a place we can live from so that we know when we're not being wholehearted and we can move back into it more and more easily as we go through our life.
Wow, those are powerful. I'm going to repeat them again before we go to our break. It was merge, doubt and denial, disenchantment, decision, and wholeheartedness. And the way you so beautifully described each stage gave me such a deep understanding of this, I don't know, the stages we go through in a relationship. As I mentioned earlier, I've been in a relationship for 25 years. And I know that for our listeners, it helped them see maybe any habits that they may have. So thank you for sharing that. When we come back from our next break, I want to talk about something you say, that there's three magic words when it comes to communicating with our partner. And I would love to find out what those magic words are, my friend.
Okay.
We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. I'm with Linda Carroll, the author of the recently released Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love. And you can learn more at lindacarroll.com. We'll be right back.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
It's time to amplify your intuitive superpowers and allow your soul to lead the way. When you hear, trust, and follow your inner wisdom, you'll discover your soul's path, a path that leads to the joyful, authentic, and abundant life you desire and deserve. Master intuitive teacher, coach, and healer, Carolyn McGee is known as the Angel, Animal, and Intuition Oracle. She has taught thousands of professional, corporate, and entrepreneurial women to trust themselves and their divine intuition so they can show up in their full power in business and in life. With a background of over 20 years in high tech, Carolyn knows firsthand the importance of living from a blend of her masculine and feminine energies. If you're ready to embrace your intuitive superpowers, visit CarolynMcGee.com to learn about Carolyn's supportive programs and offerings.
Me, a cat moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations, and we're talking about love and relationships with Linda Carroll. So, Linda, you say there's those three magic words when it comes to communicating with our partner. Would you share them with us today?
Yes, I sure will. The magic words are, tell me more. So this is how it works. I just worked with a couple last night, and it was really amazing. Usually what happens, our partner comes home, comes in the other room from work if they're working from home, or comes in from the garden or whatever it is that's happening, and says, "Oh, I just had some trouble with someone I work with, let's say," and our response to that is usually, or it could be something really positive. "I just had this fabulous idea," and our response to that is usually, "Well, what happened?" And after they tell us what the idea was or what happened, we make a comment like, I got a weird feeling from that person when I met him. I bet he's hard to work with. Or can we really afford to go on a vacation to Iceland? That's a great idea, but who's going to pay for it? Or we take the idea or we take the feeling or the story and we do something with it. That it's not that it's bad that we do something with it. But what happens is there's nowhere for our partner to explore what really was happening for them. And so let's say that our partner comes in, let's start with the first one, and says, "I'm really having trouble with someone I work with." And so the response may be, "Well, how come?" "Well, because, she always wants to have her ideas heard first." And then we go into a story about, "Well, I remember when I worked with someone like that," or "Have you tried this?" or "Have you thought of that?" But when you say, "Tell me more," it does something completely different. You say, "I'd like to hear more about what that's like for you." And the person begins an inquiry into themselves. So what's that like for me is that, I don't know, I just start to feel, whenever she starts to have an idea, I start to feel very small. And I realize that I don't then put my ideas in. So then instead of telling our partner what we think that means, or putting it on our own experience on it, we say, "So you start to feel small, like, what does that mean? How small? Tell me more about that." And then they might say something like, "Oh my gosh, I just realized it reminds me of when my older brother was always putting his ideas in and I felt like I was the little kid who didn't know anything." Or it will lead them to some kind of awareness of themselves that they would never get otherwise. And it's something we can use with our friends, with our kids. And you can't do it all the time, because then you'll make people nuts all the time saying, "Tell me more, tell me more." But when you're really in a position to listen, and this goes into the chapter on listening, to really listen, you know that the person's talking is not about you. It's about them. And a good listener helps them deepen their understanding of what they're saying so that they can actually sometimes have a remarkable insight or an awareness that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
So powerful. It's conscious listening, right? Being really present and not projecting ourselves into their experience.
That's right. Conscious listening. Exactly.
And it does, you can just feel the empowering difference between the two types of conversations, of how those conversations could have went. One, your partner actually feels heard. And I've been guilty of that too, Linda, where it's like we have this thing that we have to fix whatever they're telling us or guide or give advice on. And I think that closes down the conversation.
It closes it down. That's right. And you know, one of the things in our partnerships is that when you started out in the relationship, for most of us, one of the great things about it was how we listened to each other. We would just listen and listen, and we want to know more. But the longer you're with someone, sometimes there's a tendency to think you've heard the stories, you know what they think. You know, I was working with a couple last night, and every time the man was talking about something, his partner was interrupting and saying, but no, I think what you really mean is, or I think what was going on with you. And I got them to do this. And she found out something, and so did he, that neither of them had known about this guy. Because he was a guy who was, sort of a computery guy, always in his head. She was an artist. She is really feeling. And so she was always filling in the blanks about how he felt. He was happy to let her do it. But because she was willing to ask him to explore his own feeling, what was going on for him, they both learned something very important about him. So when the longer you've been with someone, I think the more tendency there often is to think, I don't need to ask, tell me more, because I know all about you and your little brother and blah, blah, blah. But in fact, it's one of the great things we did at the beginning that got us into the relationship is we were so interested in what the other said. And it's a way to bring that interest back, to start to be that person who listens again.
And what a gift it is. I've noticed that has changed in our relationship over the years. And I'm the one that has to be more conscious because I'm an empath and a connector, and I feel everything deeply. And thankfully he does too. And one of his sacred gifts in life is he's an amazing conscious listener, not just to me, but to his friends. And because of that, he's taught me how to be a better listener. So we can often learn from our partners when we step back a little bit. And I want to ask you too, Linda, because you encourage your readers to use and instead of but. And I'm curious why that's so.
Because, if I say to you, Linda Joy, I really love your program, but what happens?
It's almost like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because but usually means something negative is about to follow.
Right. Or if I say, I love you, but, which is even more, I love you, but. But, you know, what I'm really talking about is allowing for many truths to be there. You know, I think that for instance, ambivalence in a relationship is not abnormal. It doesn't mean I don't love my partner. If I say, I wonder what it would be like to be single, it doesn't mean I don't want to be married. It doesn't mean, or I don't want to be in a committed relationship. I really want to spend the month, I want to go on vacation with you, but I want to go with my girlfriends too. What that does is it can't, when you say, but it cancels out the first thing that you're going to say. You know, I really want to have I want to spend the 2 weeks I have off this summer with you. And my best girlfriend just invited me to go on a trip to Bali. And I want to do that too. How does that sound compared to, I really want to spend those 2 weeks with you, but I would really love to go with her. So when we say, and, it lets lots of things be true. I want to spend the day with you, and I want to go for a walk with my friend. It's very different than but. And when you are going to talk about something that's pretty intense, and you start out with, I love you, but, the other person stops listening the minute you say but. So can we hold many things to be true? I love you, and right now I need some space. I love you, and I want to spend time with you, and I want to spend time with my friend, and both are true. So using the and allows us to have a much bigger set of feelings and wishes for ourselves and truths for ourselves, and it's a lot less threatening.
It just sounds more, I don't know, more inclusive, more open, more, you know, more filled with possibility. When you hear but, you automatically feel the energy shut down in the conversation.
And you shut down as a listener, don't you? When your partner
says, you do.
But you're closed off. You know something's coming, you don't want it to come, and you just push it away. So that goes back to this whole thing about communication, which I said something about in the last part of the show, which was how you begin a conversation, how you open it, has everything to do with where it goes next. So being able to recognize to know where I am when I want to talk about something, to know where my emotional energy is. If I'm really angry, that's what I was talking about, is that if I'm really angry, for instance, and I feel an intense need to bring up the fact that once again you forgot the spinach, and I've got a huge amount of energy about that, that huge amount of energy doesn't mean I need to bring it up. It means I need to go for a walk and think about why it's so big for me. Because if I bring it up with all of that intensity, you can be sure my partner is not going to hear it.
Yeah. Such great lessons and insights you've been sharing today. And we're going to take our last break. And when we come back, you mentioned this a couple of times about being defensive and your energy in a conversation. So when we come back, I'd love to talk to the people, and I've been there too, who have a tendency to get defensive in their relationships, and maybe give us some strategies on how we can shift that.
I will. And Linda, I wanted to say that my website is lindaacarroll.com, and there's an A.
I am so glad that you caught that, and it's right in front of me, and I saw the A, so it is going to be on the web, friends, but it's lindaacarroll.com, and we're going to be back in a moment with Linda, author of Love Skills, and again, that's lindaacarroll.com. We'll be right back.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Are you feeling a deep, persistent ache in your soul, telling you there is so much more you could be experiencing? Are you tired of your life quietly being shaped by fear and doubt instead of by your dreams? Inspirational speaker, certified law of attraction coach, and best-selling author Kelly Michelle empowers heart-centered women in their 40s and 50s to boldly reimagine and recreate their next phase of life in alignment with who they are now. Through her deeply transformational coaching, programs, and writing, Kelly emboldens, inspires, and guides women like you to embrace your inner truth. This is your invitation to discover new, incredible opportunities available to you in this profound and powerful time in your life. Visit yourdreamsyourlife.com to learn more about Kelly's supportive and transformational programs and to schedule your complimentary Clarity Breakthrough session.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
This is OTR FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Welcome back to Inspired Conversations. We're talking about love, relationships, the cycles of love, and Linda just shared some beautiful insights and strategies, including three magic words to use when it comes to communicating with our partner. And right before the break, we talked about, you know, I think all of us sometimes have that tendency to get defensive in our relationship, Linda. So let's talk about that and share some strategies that our listeners can use.
Well, okay, so defensiveness, I think, is, you know, I write a lot. I write a lot for blogs, and I probably have about 100 blogs out there. And of all the things I've written about, some which I think are really, really interesting, the ones I write, I have 4 or 5 about defensiveness. Those are the ones that bring in letters, phone calls, and they get read more than anything else, is that defensiveness seems to be one of the most significant issues that people deal with. And so before I talk about defensiveness, let me just say that in a relationship where we're connected to another person, there's stages that we go through on a regular basis in our communication. And it starts with we're connected. And then there's some kind of a rupture. And the rupture can be small. It doesn't have to be big. It can be something like, you know, I forgot to put gas in your car, or I didn't do the laundry like I said, or I wasn't listening to what you said. But ruptures happen. It's just because we're human. And after a rupture happens, we feel disconnected. So we need to be able to address it. Hey, you forgot the spinach, and I was really looking forward to making a salad with spinach. It's a small thing. It doesn't mean anything. It's just being able to make a protest or to say, oh, you forgot to put gas in my car. That's annoying. But what happens if we're with a partner who's defensive or we're defensive, when our partner makes a small protest like you forgot to get the spinach, what the defensive person hears is not, I forgot to get the spinach. What they hear is, I'm not worthy. I'm always messing up. I don't deserve love. And what it goes to a place that is a one on the scale of an annoyance to a 10, and it goes to their basic lack of self-worth. We are defensive for lots of reasons. And one of the biggest reasons is that some people are just more sensitive. You know, we call them thin-skinned. And I think that, we all have defensive mechanisms and they protect us, and we all need defensive mechanisms. But for people who are highly defensive, many of them come into the world that way. They're sensitive to everything, not just being overly defensive, maybe overly aware of beauty too, but they have what happens is they personalize things very deeply. Or we may have grown up in a family where we got blamed a lot, and so we learned how to be defensive. But what happens is that the defensiveness gets in the way of being able to communicate about trouble. And an easy trouble, like you forgot the spinach, which has an easy solution, sorry, honey, I'll go get it. That's the end. But if a highly defensive person hears that, then they will find a way to defend themselves. They may defend by saying, well, look what you forgot, or you're always on me, or back off. And if you've been in a relationship for a long time with a person who's highly defensive, one of the things you may learn is not to make a complaint, not to protest. But here's what happens, Linda. If I don't protest, I put that protest under the carpet, and the carpet gets very, very lumpy. And pretty soon, it starts to cut off connection. There's protest, there's rupture, there's repair, and reconnection. I forgot that you forgot the spinach. Sorry, honey, I'll get it. Oh, that's okay. I don't need spinach anyway. That's how that conversation probably will go if it is easy. But if it's, I forgot this, you forgot the spinach, oh, you're always on me, then what happens to the person who's complaining is they put it away, and the complaint goes from a 1 to an 8. I can't say anything to her without her getting defensive. So we need to really be able to talk about that. The defensiveness is not wrong. We are wired to protect ourselves, and we need to. But sometimes when it becomes a problem in a relationship, it really starts to shut down all of our ability to be open with each other. So being able to, first of all, recognize if you're a person who's with somebody who's defensive, you may have shut so much off that you're feeling a lot of resentment. And it's an important thing to be able to talk about. If you're a person who knows you're defensive, then you start with that, realizing, okay, now this is really important, that your first job is to not be defensive that you're defensive. It's not a character default. It's not a character fault. It's just something that you learned, and we can learn to be less defensive. So I have a whole strategy, a whole 6-point strategy in my book about it, starting with recognizing if that's true for me, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with me as a person. We all have strengths and we all have troubles. And I think our job as humans is to maximize our strengths and to work on our challenges. Some people could be a little more defensive, you know, they're willing to say, oh, I'm sorry about everything. That's another kind of problem. But the defensive problem is really something that shuts down love, because if I can't protest, I can't reconnect.
So true. And what I was remembering back in an important relationship in my life, he was the one that was always defensive. And I would always feel like I was walking on eggshells.
Yes.
So what happened is I stopped being authentic. I stopped being me. I kept self-monitoring every word I would say, every action I would take, because I knew what would happen if I said anything. And of course, after 3 years, the relationship ended because I had to choose between my truth and living authentically and being happy, or always feeling on eggshells. Is that another feeling that people describe, of this feeling of not being able to live their truth, live authentically?
That's right. And the thing that I think is interesting is that for so many of our complaints, the other person just saying, sorry, I'll go get the spinach, or sorry, I'll put gas in the car. Yeah, you're right. The whole thing is over. It doesn't go anywhere. We don't even want them to do it. It's just being recognized. You know, what just happened? Oh, I know what happened. I had a file downstairs of something really important, and my husband wrote something on it, which was some notes he was taking from a phone call. And I went down, I picked up the file, and his writing was all over it. And I got really upset. And I said, I said, that was mine. And you wrote this stuff all over it. And he said, honey, I am so sorry. And I felt this intensity of outrage. How could he write on my file? He said, honey, I'm so sorry. I need to have my own pad of paper. I'm really sorry I picked that up. The minute he said that, what do you think happened? I stopped being upset. I said, oh, it's so stupid. It's a file. It's fine. I shouldn't have left it here. But if he had defended himself and said, well, you shouldn't have left it there, what do you think would have happened? I probably wouldn't have said, oh, you're right.
No, because you probably would have blew your top.
I just needed to be heard. And that's so often true.
Oh, it's so important. I think, I'm 58, and that's the most important thing for me, is I need conscious listening, conscious relationship. I need to know that I'm heard, but also that I give space for him to be heard. And I guess, I don't know if it's as you age or just as you awaken, you just have this deep desire for more depth.
Yes.
And connection. And that's where I'm at in my life. I'm so blessed that I'm with someone that's open to that too, and we can have these beautiful conversations. But for me, that's where I'm at. I want more depth in the relationship I have, and in all relationships I have, friends, my children, grandchildren. Times are changing, and I think we're finding out what's truly important.
I think that's right. I agree.
So in our last few moments, Linda, along with all the amazing strategies you've already shared, is there a piece of wisdom, guidance, something that you feel led you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I think that that especially in the times that I know this is coming out in a few weeks in the middle of this pandemic that we're all in, where we're quartered away, and that these skills have never been more important. Because everything is intensified, and when we're anxious, we do different things with it. One person wants to talk about it, and one person doesn't. One person wants to watch the news all the time, and the other person wants to do a watercolor. And it's never been as important, I think, as it is now. That we remember that the number one quality that makes for the best relationships is the generosity, the quality of generosity, which lets the other person be themselves. And so that generosity is something we can develop in ourselves. And it's what makes relationships thrive. It's what makes good sex. It's what makes good conversation. And it's what makes living together in a very stressful time successful, when we have the generosity to let the other person be themselves, and even bless that, and find a way to manage our differences without making them wrong.
Oh, such an important message for today's times. And that hits home even for us, Dana and I. We're self-isolating, as we all are. We process differently. And one thing I've learned in my time with him and how I process is that just because I process one way, I feel deeply, it's not right for me to expect him to process the same way, and to be able, as you said, to give him space to be who he is and to process. And so we each have this understanding of, hey, if I'm feeling emotional, I'll go right up to him and go, hey, I'm feeling a little emotional and anxious about everything. And I'm not asking him to fix it. Sometimes I just walk up to him, I go in his arms, and he goes, what's up, baby? And I'm like feeling a little anxious on these right now. The moment I speak it out loud, Linda, it washes away. And he knows I'm not asking him for advice, guidance. He just gives me a safe space to share it. And then he always kisses me on the forehead. He goes, did Dr. Dana help? And I'm like, yep. He gives me the safe space to be heard without trying to fix it.
Yes.
To me, that's a gift from my way of the relationship. And it's a release of physical energy that suddenly the anxiety, the unease is gone because I could speak my truth, have it held, and then it's gone.
Well, that's part of tell me more, isn't it? What we were talking about earlier. Tell me more is not trying to fix it. It's letting you do the inquiry that leads you to your own solution. So that goes back to that first conversation we had that was so rich about that.
And that's why I am so excited to share this episode of Inspired Conversations right now. The work in you're doing in the world is even more important because we're all, quarantined. So I want to thank you for being here, Linda. I want to thank you for the work you're doing. And I want to say the URL again, and that's lindaacarroll.com. Please visit her to learn more about her amazing books that are out there, as well as the other services she provides to support you in your relationships. Until next time, my friends, choose love, choose joy, choose happiness. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy. Join our sacred space every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern and meet leading female visionaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. Inspired Conversations with Linda Joy is a soulful venue where guests share the obstacles they've overcome, along with wisdom and lessons learned on their personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic and soulful living.